Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome back inside the house at Gillette Stadium. We got a game to play this week. So, bye week is done. Get it out of the way. Hopefully it's out of your system as well. It's all football each and every week from here on out. Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook. My name is John Rook. Web radio at Patriots.com. Email address remains the same, 508-543-7482. Telephone number remains the same as well. A couple of things on the top for today. We hope to hear from the San Jose Mercury News before the end of the program today to talk a little bit more about the 49ers. The fact that former practice teamer J.T. O'Sullivan is now running things for the 49ers. So that's kind of an interesting story. And I'm sure that we, as we touched on it last week a little bit, we'll touch on it more and more over the course of this week. 49ers, of course, 2-2 after their loss at New Orleans this past Sunday, while the Patriots, of course, had Sunday off. And tomorrow's show will certainly be, I'm going to go ahead and put it out there right now, because tomorrow's show ought to be a lot of fun. Randy Cross from NFL, from the CBS, and of course he does the Patriots football games, the preseason games on the television as well, on the Patriots Network. He will be joining us tomorrow, former 49er as well, so we'll get him in here and get his thoughts on what has transpired through these 4 weeks now that we have had during the course of the regular season. All right, a couple of other things right off the top. Obviously, we'll talk a little bit about Lane Kiffin and his firing from the Oakland Raiders, a future Patriot opponent, I might add, of course, in December. There is a piece out on ProFootballTalk.com. And forgive me, because I do not know if anybody mentioned this during PFW in progress today, but seeing as I always check in before the show starts, this just was posted approximately 45 minutes ago, 50 minutes ago on ProFootballTalk.com. It says that Tom Brady has chosen a surgeon to repair his injured left knee, and he is expected to have the surgery in Los Angeles, not here in Massachusetts. Not in Boston, not in Foxborough, not in Rhode Island, not in New England. The Boston Globe is actually reporting this, and I picked it up on PFT. Boston Globe is reporting that Brady is on track to undergo the procedure 4 weeks after the injury, which we actually have been telling you here on the program. It's going to take about 4 weeks for him to have the surgery, and it looks like he is on course for that 4 weeks after the injury, which occurred, of course, on September the 7th. Reportedly, it's a torn ACL and MCL. Doctors usually wait for the MCL to heal before they perform the surgery on the ACL. All the swelling and stuff has to go down. The doctor that Brady has chosen is Dr. Neil S. Elatrash, I think that's how he pronounces it, of the Curlin Job Orthopedic Clinic in Los Angeles. Of course, we realize that Tom being from there, that's probably why he's going a little bit closer to home here. This doctor wrote the book, apparently literally wrote the book, on surgical techniques in sports medicine. So there you go. He's picked a doctor, won't be here, it'll be someplace else. It'll be in Los Angeles. But at least he's on track to have the surgery, and we'll keep you posted, from time to time as the situation warrants. But anytime there is news, we know that there's obvious interest in that news, even though it might not necessarily be on the football field, and we'll bring you up to date on that. So anybody find themselves bored this weekend? I mean, be honest. I missed certainly having a game. The other thing that I missed was just, it's a good way to put this, emotion. I missed, what else did we miss? being able to get into this a little bit more. I mean, because we know that whenever the Patriots do play, other than the bye week, then you certainly have a little bit more of a vested interest in the action that happens on the field. And it just obviously, the week being off like that, just didn't have the quite same, you know, get up and go. Now, I spent my time trying to watch as much as, you know, future opponents as I could. I watched a little of the Buffalo game, managed to turn the Buffalo game off at, unfortunately, the wrong time. It was 14-13. Rams were leading when I kind of flicked back and forth. And honestly, I guess we all missed out on that one because the Bills put it to them, ended up winning, going away at the end. That loss, of course, obviously led to yesterday's news that Scott Linehan is going to be out and Jim Haslett was coming in to replace him as head coach of the Rams. So, and then, of course, with the news that Lane Kiffin is fired today, which is an interesting story, and I'll tell you about it if you're just tuning in just a minute. But that's two future Patriots opponents now that have both changed coaches, removed one coach for another. I'm not sure I remember the last time that happening. I mean, we've had in-season firings before. But for two in-season firings to happen and both of those teams to be future opponents on the Patriots' schedule, you ever stop and wonder how that might affect preparation? Because coaches do have their own styles and their own ways of doing things. You can't really change personnel, obviously. But it certainly means that there's got to be, I would think, a little extra study put in when it comes time to the Rams and then later this year when it comes time to the Raiders. Because coaches do coach to tendencies in certain groupings and plays that they like to call and what have you. So not only do you have to study what those two teams have done to this point in time when they right prior to making their change, but then you have to study what they're going to do from that point in time. And in addition, you've got to study what coaches do. Now, if there is a library of coaches and what they like to do, and who knows at this stage of the game after everything we went through last year with video libraries around here, you're as a Patriot, you'd be looking at Jim Haslett and his techniques. You may not be able to look at anything where the Raiders are concerned because, quite frankly, there is no particular replacement named yet for the Raiders. I don't know who in their right mind would – I don't know who in their right mind would take that job, except for taking it just like Lane Kiffin took it. He's young. He's energetic. He wants a shot at being a head guy. And even though he knew that he was destined for failure, he still wanted a chance to put it on his resume. I don't know. It'll be interesting to hear what he might have to say in the next couple of weeks, how he felt the experience went, especially when you consider the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey usually says. Let me tell you the rest of the story. Al Davis called him this morning. Actually, it would have been right after noontime. So it's been about a couple of hours ago now, our time. And not only fired him over the phone, but fired him without pay, according to team sources. Now, I don't know how in the heck Al Davis feels like he can get away with it. I'm not privy to Lane Kiffin's contract, his contractual situation, how he took the job. I don't know. But I cannot imagine anybody in their right mind signing a contract, binding them to one person or one entity, and that if you are fired for something other than cause, in other words, doing something really, really bad, you're expected to be paid the majority of your contract, the rest of your contract that you have coming to you. I mean, and if I'm Lane Kiffin, you had to know that the footsteps were coming, right? So certainly he's had an attorney, an agent, or whatever, look over this contract to find out, hey, all right, if I'm fired here in midseason, obviously I may not be working again for the rest of this year. So am I still going to be able to cash a paycheck? Now, I'm not sure where the whole pay thing comes into play. This is just I guess it boils down to a difference of opinion based on what I've read and what we know, that there was a relationship fracture, between Kiffin and Davis. When Kiffin tried to fire former Patriots defensive coach and the current defensive coordinator, Rob Ryan, after last season was over. Apparently, Kiffin then suggested to Davis that Davis had reneged on an agreement between the two that the coach would have control over his own staff. Normally, coaches have control over their own staffs. Maybe not in this instance. Davis then apparently sent a letter of resignation for Kiffin to sign, and Kiffin didn't do that. Kiffin apparently opposed some of the free agent signings like Javon Walker and D'Angelo Hall. He also went public expressing some frustration that the team wasn't aggressive in claiming other free agents. And then according to Raiders sources, Davis apparently sent a letter to Kiffin after the season's opening game, the loss to Denver, trying to document that the coach approved these offseason acquisitions. So I guess there's got to be, sounds to me like there's some language in the contract that Davis apparently feels he can supersede in order to keep from having to pay Lane Kiffin. Now, I don't know why that would come as a surprise to anybody, because Al Davis, obviously, he's fought the NFL and he's beaten the NFL. After all, how could he go from Oakland to Los Angeles back to Oakland again? Apparently as somewhat effortlessly as he has done throughout his tenure as Raiders owner. So I'm sure he feels like, hey, if I can beat the NFL in the courts, I can certainly whip Lane Kiffin's butt. I don't know if this is the height of hubris, or if it's just pure stupidity, or if the senility has finally set in, or if Lane Kiffin is really dumb to sign the deal that he signed. I don't know. Maybe this will all come out in the wash over the next few days. Maybe it will never come out. I don't know. But I have to admit, I don't know how an organization can be competitive on the field with so much turmoil going on within, roiling within as it is. It's amazing. Since their appearance in Super Bowl 37. That's 6 years now since they've made an appearance in the Super Bowl. They've gone through four coaches. They have seven road wins total in those six seasons, and their winning percentage is but 24%. Think of that. Since being AFC champion and losing to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Super Bowl 37, in between the two Patriots appearances, obviously, between 01 and 03. This team has had four coaches, 24% winning percentage, seven road wins in 6 years. That's just unfathomable. How does something go that far south that quickly? Raiders are 1-3 on the season thus far. They have blown leads in the fourth quarter in two of those three losses. They had leads in the fourth quarter over the Bills, obviously, and in fact this last Sunday as well over the San Diego Chargers. In fact, here's the one stat that tells me that it's not necessarily Kiffin's fault here. Maybe a little tweaking needs to be done, personnel-wise or even coaching-wise. But in Kiffin's 20-game tenure as head coach, the Raiders were a mere 5-15. But in those 20 games, the Raiders took leads into the fourth quarter 11 times. So they lacked the ability to finish. I don't know if that's necessarily something that you hang on the head coach's head, but just an interesting perspective. Interesting perspective. So when he was hired as head coach, he was the NFL's youngest coach at 31 years old back in February of 07, almost 2 years ago. He was hired straight from USC at Southern Cal, where he was the offensive coordinator at the time. His father, obviously, is a well-known defensive coordinator, you know, in NFL circles. Interesting source. Interesting story. The leading source, the leading candidate, by the way, to replace him is not Rob Ryan, even though I know he was, I believe he's still one of the three that's being considered. There was some talk that, in fact, this was even publicized by Kiffin somewhat. He was being a little bit disgruntled in a public appearance and talking about how going basically around the circle saying that a guy like Rob Ryan might even be stabbing him in the back and undermining his ability to become an effective head coach. I mean, gosh, a nasty, nasty situation. Tom Cable is the team's offensive line coach, and apparently Cable, according to Chris Mortensen at ESPN here, apparently Cable is emerging as the leading candidate to replace Kiffin. There were other candidates, Greg Knapp, who's the offensive coordinator, consultant Paul Hackett was one of those, and I guess Ryan may not even be on this list here, according to Mortensen, which I find very strange and just completely unexplainable beyond what I've already mentioned. I'm not sure we can go too much further with it. So it's pretty interesting. But Al Davis doesn't want to pay the guy. I find that rather remarkable. So it'd be interesting to see what kind of verbiage comes out in his contract as the situation plays itself out. And again, how does this affect the Patriots? Well, as I mentioned earlier, both of the NFL coaching changes that have happened over the last 24 hours involve future Patriot opponents this year, which means Patriots will end up having to do a little extra homework down the line in preparations for the Rams and later the Raiders. Doesn't really affect them much this week, I know, with San Francisco. But it bears watching, and it's a story worth looking at simply because of that. And one of the things we do here inside the playbook is try to also take a little bit of a big picture point of view and look on down the line to future opponents, future happenings, future events that could directly or indirectly affect New England. So this certainly is going to directly affect New England. One of the other things that I wanted to bring up concerning a future opponent has to do with those Rams. Because when they replaced Jim Haslett, or excuse me, yeah, when they replaced brought Jim Haslett in as the head coach, replacing Scott Linehan. The first move that he made, and of course there was a lot of, you may have read this over the course of the last week, there was a lot of sniping and I guess displeasure coming from the Rams locker room for the replacement, for the change that Linehan made at quarterback in bringing in Trent Green as the starter, replacing Mark Bulger. Admittedly, Bulger had not done terribly well, but Bulger was also getting pounded unmercifully by the Rams. And a lot of players felt like it was not Bulger's fault, and that Trent Green, for lack of a better phrase, didn't really deserve the opportunity. Well, for whatever reason, Haslett, in one of his first moves as head coach of the Rams, has now reinstated Mark Bulger as St. Louis's starting quarterback. I don't know what that means. Bulger was back with the starters today on practice. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that he's the highest paid player in franchise history. I don't know. But anyway, so former defensive coordinator Haslett, now head coach, has reinstated Mark Bulger as Rams starting quarterback. So that's the latest news going on about Patriots' future opponents on down the line. I have to admit, I don't necessarily have a definitive question of the day today. The reason that I do not is because coming off of a bye week, to me, there's a lot of different areas that we can go, a lot of different ways we can go without trying to focus it on one particular area. I'm kind of asking you, what is on your mind about this team? What concerns you right now on this day? On the final day of the month of September in 2008, what concerns you the most about this team at this stage of the game? Is it the inconsistency from Castle? Is there an injury? Is there inconsistency in the offensive line? Is it the overall age of the defense, which certainly seems to be a recurring theme from members of the national media? What is it? What bothers you about this team? After the 4 weeks now, the team 2-1, we kind of talked a little about this last week. And how I thought that after 3 weeks, I thought this team would be 2-1. And yet nobody feels like this Patriots team is on schedule. Do you? Do you feel like this team is on schedule? What are they on schedule for? Now, if Tom Brady were the quarterback, we'd all be very upset with his team being 2-1. There's no doubt. But in light of the fact that he went down in week one, we've all reevaluated where we think this team is now and where it can go. Everybody's reevaluated. I'm sure you've gone through the schedule and done win, lose, win, win, lose, lose. You've done it just like everybody has done, and you figured out, oh, well, that used to be a win. It may not be now. So everybody has a different standard for this team to live up to. So for this team to reach the standard that you have set for it, what do they need to do? Where's the problem area? Where's the trouble spot? Where's the weak link? I guess that's a good way to phrase it. Maybe we just through talking it out here, we've come up with a question today. Initially, I wanted to just kind of open it up to see what you thought. But actually, that's a pretty good one. Where's the weak link with this Patriots team right now? What is the weak link, and how can this team fix it? Webradio@patriots.com. Webradio@patriots.com. 508-543-7482. That's the telephone number. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today. He's going to join us in the second hour. Right, Minnie Gary? Isn't that correct? Isn't B-Lo coming in today? He's not coming in today? He's out today. Okay, so he's not coming in. It'd be nice if I get told that at some point. So it'll just be us here today, guys. So bring in the emails. Bring in the emails, and let's see if we can go through some stuff, all right? Webradio@patriots.com. Let's pause here for a moment, and then we'll come back and look at some emails from earlier today. We'll pass on some other news and notes from around the National Football League. Lots of stuff going on. Absolutely lots of news being made. And, of course, the Patriots somehow, someway are finding themselves right in the middle of it, or at least will eventually find themselves right in the middle of it. Okay, webradio@patriots.com. Let's get cooking inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna here. Let me tell you about the game with the greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching a game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the Game with the Greats on October 5th at Gillette Stadium. Watch the Patriots take on the 49ers in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me and a bunch of other Patriot alumni. Guys like newly inducted Hall of Famer Andre Tippett and Patriots Hall of Famers Ben Coates, Stanley Morgan, Steve Nelson, and Steve Grogan will be there. Tickets are limited because they're only $40. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and a long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriots-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
Welcome back inside the playbook for a Tuesday, Patriots playbook on Patriots.com radio. John Rook with you on this Tuesday. Game week number 4 for the Patriots, week 5 in the NFL season. Pats getting ready to go on the road to play San Francisco this Sunday at Candlestick Park. It's a 4:15 Eastern Time afternoon kickoff for the Pats. Now let me kind of go through something with you here, because I find that sometimes you like to just dismiss outright things that other media outlets say. One, however, caught my attention. This was Sunday afternoon in particular. And I have to admit, I've been giving it some thought over the course of the last day or so, and I want to know whether or not you kind of give it any credibility or not. I'm talking in particular about how the Arizona Cardinals stayed east during their last couple of wins, and on the Fox postgame show called the OT, Jimmy Johnson was in particular critical. I don't know if you saw this or not Sunday. Jimmy Johnson was in particular critical of the Cardinals' decision to stay east, and said they should have just gone back home, and obviously they lost both of the games. In light of the fact that someone like Jimmy Johnson and the others on the panel said it was a stupid thing for the Cardinals to do, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, but if you saw it, you know what I'm talking about. How do you feel about the Patriots doing that very thing? How do you feel about the Patriots doing that very thing, staying west, actually? And the plan is to, you know, leave later this week, play the game in San Francisco, then work out and basically headquarter in San Jose, from my understanding, and then follow that up with the game in San Diego before coming back home. So they're going to stay west for 2 weeks. I also heard Mike Golic, of course, on the ESPN radio earlier this morning. And let's take a quick timeout, because we're going to have a guest here joining in just a second. So let's take a quick timeout. We'll come back, and I'll continue that thought here in just a moment.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba Catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba Catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call, and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
All right, welcome back inside the playbook. Sorry for that, folks. Sometimes you just got to make sure that you got all your ducks in a row before you move on. All right. I want to welcome into the program John Krumpacker, who covers for the San Francisco Chronicle here with us inside the playbook. John, thanks for a couple of moments. Sorry to keep you waiting, and welcome to New England, if by the internet anyway.
Thank you, John.
John, appreciate the time. Let me ask you this. What do you think of the just because that's what we were talking about before I was just notified that you're going to be with us. The Patriots are going to basically plan to camp out on the West Coast for 2 weeks. Didn't work out very well for Arizona this last week. What are your thoughts when you hear a team get ready to do something like that? And I'm not aware that it's a terribly successful decision for teams when they decide to do something like that.
Well, on the surface, it seems to make sense. You know, I'm sure that the team is thinking it doesn't want to fly cross country, twice within a week. I think it's just depends on the caliber of the team. You can't really compare the Patriots or the Cardinals to the Patriots just based on their track record as a franchise. I would think the Patriots would be much more equipped to handle something like this say, a team like Arizona.
In theory, yes. In practicality, nobody's really sure. We're kind of going through this.
I can recall covering the 49ers back when they were actually a good team, a championship team, and they had to relocate because of heavy rains out here in California to Arizona.
Okay.
For playoff work, and they spent a week training at the Cardinals facility just to get some dry land, and I don't recall that being an issue.
Okay, well then maybe it won't be. I guess the reason that I had brought it up was because I saw on ESPN, and then I also saw, I think it was on Fox in their post game, and some of their quote unquote analysts basically lambasted the Cardinals' decision to do that, thinking that it was kind of stupid and it might have cost them a chance at a win and what have you. And I guess maybe that was just a particular coaching style. It certainly does seem to make things more efficient. I just wondered in practicality whether or not that seemed to be, in your estimation, perhaps the rule rather than the exception, if you've got bi-coastal back-to-back appearances like that.
Well, it seems to make sense, taking less of a toll on the body. I wasn't consulted, so I really don't have a strong opinion on the subject matter. It just seems to make logistical sense, but
sure,
you know.
Sure, understood. The one connection I think to San Francisco that Patriots fans are finally becoming aware of now, I guess, as they get going today, is the fact that they have a former scout team, practice team quarterback running the show for San Francisco and JT O'Sullivan. And I know that that'll probably be a part of the conversation throughout the course of the week. What has it been about his development this year that has been most surprising to most in San Francisco, do you think?
I would say it's his confidence. He's very confident in his abilities, with nothing really to back it up, because he's been a lot of places for a very short period of time and hasn't established himself anywhere. But maybe that all that was good for him. That it led to him being the player he is now. He's confident and determined, and had the most experience with the Mike Martz offensive system, so he had that going for him. And he was decisive in his play until even given last week when he was hounded pretty good by the Saints, sacked six times.
Yeah,
the passes he did get off are generally accurate, and it's been an impressive start for someone with very little on his resume.
Sure. Now, I guess it probably, I don't know, maybe it did anything for his confidence or not, to have someone like Vernon Davis speak up and say, hey, I'm not getting the ball enough, like he did after the game on Sunday. What's been the immediate reaction to Davis pulling almost a T.O., if you will?
Well, Davis is by far the most emotional and temperamental player on the team. He just he reacts in the moment. I don't think it's... it had or will have any lasting effect. He does that regularly. This is certainly not the first time he's gotten emotional about things. Mike Nolan seems to like that emotion, as long as he doesn't get carried away with himself and it doesn't distract or detract him from his play. It's just as Davis himself was quoted in the paper today, was that's just him being him. So it's really, to me, a non-story.
So nobody really is concerned about that one way or the other. He's legitimately just spouting off emotion, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand, this is a guy who a year ago in training camp tangled with Larry Allen, and on the surface, not a smart thing to do. But yeah, that's just, he got emotional about something, and they ended up tangling a little bit until they were separated.
Sure, understood. John Krumpacker for the San Francisco Chronicle with us here inside Patriots Playbook. Mike Nolan has this team 2-2. I would assume a bit disappointed with the game with New Orleans this last week, even though it was a loss. It seemed like the team was maybe a little bit ahead of schedule, certainly had won a couple of games to this point in time. What kind of a leash does he now have with this team at this stage of the season?
Was that a leash you said?
Yeah. I mean, does he, are fans, media, ownership, are they still willing to work with him and see that he nurtures this situation along, or are people becoming more and more impatient?
Well, there's been quite a few consecutive years of down years out here, and this is a pivotal year for Nolan as a coach. He certainly bolstered the offense with Mike March, but that could be ultimately could work against him if the team's record is not that good and management ownership decides to make a move. The first person they're going to look to is Mike March, because they're not going to want to let him go, because he's obviously a proven, established offensive coordinator in this league.
Mm-hmm.
So that could be awkward as the season goes on if the team success isn't what the ownership wants. That could put Nolan in a difficult position.
I suppose it could. Has there been any sort of internal angst, to your knowledge, that March's presence might be causing Nolan? And if Nolan were to be jettisoned, would March be a candidate to replace him?
Well, I think, as I said a minute ago, he would certainly be a candidate if it comes to that. I think the team would look to him first, because they wouldn't want a man of his caliber to go to another team. So it was an interesting move to bring him in. It could and probably will change the dynamic of the coaching situation by the end of the season.
Okay,
but it's just, from a purely performance standpoint, it's been a great move to have March out here to resurrect what had been the worst offense in the NFL the last couple of years.
Would you say that March's presence has largely helped JT O'Sullivan to the point where he, that's helped lead? You talked about his confidence factor being the biggest improvement. Has March's presence helped him in that respect, do you think?
Oh, I'm sure, because he has the familiarity of the March system, having been with him most recently a year ago in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big factor. But more to the point, I think all the offensive players are feeling really good about having him as their coordinator. The comments from the other offensive players are uniformly positive.
Right. Okay. Defensively, notice that Patrick Willis had a pretty good game this last week against the Saints, even in the loss. Where else would you consider a bright spot? Where else would you consider to be a positive for the 49er team defensively?
Well, coming off the Sunday's game in New Orleans, there were really no positives on defense, other than maybe, as you said, some of the linebacker play with Patrick Willis and Takeo Spikes. But that was, at least the team would like to think that was a performance that was the exception and not the rule, with the way Drew Brees so easily shredded a veteran secondary.
Mm-hmm.
That was surprising, the ease with which the long ball was completed by New Orleans. Until this point, the addition of defensive end / outside linebacker Smith has been a very good addition for the 49ers. Smith, coming from Cincinnati, a versatile player, can play all along the defensive line, and the last week was a very productive player. Looks like he'll be a regular addition.
Well, that's kind of interesting. I guess that the general perspective of a Patriots fan looking at San Francisco, just because we're on opposite ends of the country, get a chance to play each other if we're lucky once every 4 years, is that there aren't too many people that know a lot about San Francisco, with the exception of maybe Mike Nolan's their coach. We got a guy who used to be running our scout team as their leading quarterback, and they haven't been very good recently. So because of that, and again, I'm not saying it's accurate, I'm thinking that's just probably a general perspective thing, just because of a lack of knowledge overall. As teams or as fans begin to sort of educate themselves, what would you call the overriding trait, characteristic of the San Francisco team?
Well, you left out Frank Gore, who's I think one of the top 5-6 running backs in the league. He's a productive player, and he's benefiting from the Mike Martz offensive system. He's off to a much better start than he was a year ago. And
right.
Ask defensive players around the league about Frank Gore, and they'll speak very, very highly of him. So he's an established guy in this offense. And you mentioned Patrick Willis. He's just in his second year, but he was the defensive rookie of the year in the league a year ago. He's someone else who's certainly you should be well aware
looking at,
of
right.
football fans or to you know, his contemporaries.
Sure. What are the perceptions of the Patriots from in San Francisco? As it may not maybe kind of difficult to sort of put your finger on that one at this stage. It's early in the week, but what are the thoughts about the Patriots coming there to play?
Well, this was supposed to be the game that Tom Brady played his first game at Candlestick Park against the 49ers. That
right.
was, I know that was being looked forward to. A local guy comes home and plays against a team he grew up admiring, but
sure.
you know, but that's not going to take place now. I have to really. I'll just refer to the Joey Porter quotes. The Patriots just don't. No, I think, you know, there was far too much was made of that. It was not controversial at all. He was just that the Patriots are a different team without Tom Brady in there. I think that's a fair and honest evaluation, although I fully expect the Patriots to be a playoff team by the end of the year. They've got too much talent and organization not to be able to persevere and at least give a good showing this season.
Sure.
They have talent everywhere, and it's, you know, and until I mean, they're regarded as just about the ideal franchise in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. John, what were the preseason thoughts about this team? What would have been considered? What would be considered a successful year for the 49ers?
Well, I'll have to take a pass on that. My preseason was spent in Beijing. I covered the Olympics.
Oh, so you were one of the lucky ones, huh?
Well, yeah, I didn't see one minute of training camp or the exhibition season.
Gotcha.
All I can say to that is the improvement was and is expected out of this team.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling was that it underperformed a year ago. Changes had to be made. That's why Mike Martz was brought in, and yeah, Nolan. Is under pressure. He has to produce, I would think, a winning mark to keep his job, because he was close to being fired after the last. But in meetings with ownership, he got a reprieve.
Yep. So far, he has. John, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much for spending a little bit with us, and it's good luck to you. And we'll look forward to visiting on down the line somewhere.
Thank you.
Thanks. You got it. It's John Crumpacker, who covers the 49ers for the San Francisco Chronicle. And apologize for the hurried nature of the interview, but he just called back and confirmed that he could do the interview, which is why we wanted to make sure we had all of our ducks in a row, because we want to let folks know that, you know, it's important as we try to get this thing put together. Eric Scalavino has made his way from, you know, PFW headquarters to come down and visit for a minute.
Is it Thursday already?
Yeah, I know.
This week's going by fast.
I know it has. By the way, on Thursday, you realize that I'm going to try to be sitting poolside in Tampa.
You're right. Yeah, I'm going to. The show's going to keep getting interrupted by John saying, "Excuse me, a little bit more on the on
excuse
the
me, bartender."
Yeah,
that's what I'll be. No, I don't drink before a game. So sorry. Much as I'd like
you
to,
get
sometimes
a poolside massage.
Yeah, well, you never know.
In the spa.
Yeah,
over there. Huh?
Yeah, you never know. So that was pretty good, because we weren't sure that we were going to get that this week, and to have a lot of it simply because of the time difference. I mean, right mm-hmm. now, what is it? It's 2:46 here. To
yeah, so
one,
it's 12,
yeah,
there.
It's a quarter to noon there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, guys are just kind of like, well, I don't know if we can make that time frame. It'd be mm-hmm. the same thing next week when we play San Diego, although they've been a little bit better in the past, and there now is a little history between the Patriots and the Chargers, yeah. So we'll see how that plays off. But, you know, good to get that, because, frankly, as I just mentioned with John, what do we really know about San Francisco other than, you know, the obvious? Here's a team that has been poor over the last several years. They have a first-round bust, or had a first-round bust at quarterback in Alex Smith. They got an embattled coach. They have a former Patriot, you know, practice teamer running the offense. They've got an offensive coordinator that was a failure, perhaps, at head coach. Made one of the most stupid blunders in Super Bowl history when he was coaching against the Patriots, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, what else do we really know about San Francisco?
I don't know. You know, the funny thing that that he mentioned in that interview was something I hadn't even thought of, was that the Tom Brady connection, playing
yeah.
back home.
Yeah, coming back home.
This
right.
Tom Brady may never get the chance to play in San Francisco.
That's true.
Against the 49ers.
Next time it comes back around, as soon as they can have it, is in 4 years.
8 years. Because
8 years,
years,
that's right.
Here.
4 years, that's right. They've got to come here.
So eight years from now,
that's right.
Who knows if Brady will still be playing at all, and if so, with the Patriots, and who knows what could happen in 8 years.
Well, he's actually going to be out there apparently this week anyway. Because apparently, you know, the Globe and PFT have picked up that he's going to have his surgery in L.A. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, but it just struck me as ironic that, you know, this would have been the year he got to go home and play in his hometown, and he may never get that chance again. You know, the schedule works funny. You know, sometimes you might get that random game that's not assigned mm-hmm. in that rotation mm-hmm. where you play the tops or the seed that matches your seed,
right?
And so it's possible, but I don't know how likely it is now, but. But as far as your question, what do we know about this 49ers team? I think
we're kind of learning as we go.
We're learning as we go a little bit, and the ones you brought up are the main ones. They had a bust at quarterback. They have a former Patriots practice squatter leading their show now. They have an offensive coordinator who may or may not be their head coach soon.
That's why I asked him, and I could tell he was kind of dancing around it because I think that's the question that people want to know. Well, if not Nolan, does Martz move in? I mean, that's sometimes you ask questions because you know people are thinking it. It may not be the smartest thing in the world, but if it's on folks' mind, I feel like you got to ask it.
I think they have a decent running back. Like he said, he listed him in the top five or six in
Frank
the league.
Frank Gore.
I don't know if he'd go that far, but he has the potential.
He's been pretty good.
Potential to be there. They have. They're one of the few teams that's ever drafted a tight end in the top 10
mm-hmm.
in Vernon Davis.
Who opened his mouth this week.
I didn't hear about that. What?
No, he just was disappointed that he only had one ball thrown to him. So he pulled a T.O.
Yep.
You know, and said, hey, I need the ball thrown to me a little bit more. And then, of course, the reaction in the San Francisco papers has been, oh, that's just Vernon being Vernon.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Manny Ramirez all of a sudden?
That's what I mean. It's the whole Manny influence out there, you know? Geez. And so I'm kind of like, wow, we got another one of these. And they're just saying it's a non-story.
That's Manny being Manny, you know.
We look at it a little differently because we've been inundated with that kind of stuff here mm-hmm. over the last several years and know that if that continues, it ain't good, kids. None of it's good.
What a bad precedent to set, though. Now, anytime anybody acts up now, you can just dismiss it as that person being that person.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
I don't know him. I don't know Vernon well enough to say that's Vernon being Vernon.
Yeah,
we kind of feel like we know Manny Ramirez
right,
enough
exactly.
based on his past histories around here to know that. So I'll have to leave them up to that. If it's a non-issue, mm-hmm. then it's a non-issue. But to us, when we see someone like I told him, I said pulling a Terrell Owens because mm-hmm. Owens did the same thing this week.
Oh, yeah.
After the loss to Washington,
the most
the Cowboys.
Ridiculous thing he did too was after that game because he had the ball thrown his way something like 17, 18 times?
A lot. In fact, probably a little bit too much.
And he didn't make all the catches that were thrown his way either.
No, he had a touchdown pass that he could not pull in.
So for him to complain about the number of balls thrown to him, especially after a game like that, it's not like he had one catch and one ball thrown to
Eric,
him.
Eric, he's an idiot. He just happens to be a talented idiot. That's all. There is to it.
I think he's an overrated idiot.
I think he's pretty physically talented. I don't think there's too much. I can't argue.
Here's why
with
I
that.
Say that, John.
Okay.
For a guy who's supposedly that talented, he drops too many catchable
passes.
Well,
now I will say that I don't think he has the best hands in the world. I'll give you that.
If you're that if you're a wide receiver,
I'll give you that.
You're supposed to be that talented. You're supposed to make those kind of catches.
Frankly, the physicality of his play, I think, if you compare, you know, that 81 to our 81 in particular,
mm-hmm.
I think his physical play. Is probably a little bit of an advantage, but I think our 81 has better hands overall.
Yeah, I don't see Moss dropping catches like that.
No.
You know?
And, you know, usually that's the case.
And, you know, so far I haven't heard him complain that he's only had two catches in the last game.
No, if anybody could complain, you know, we've been kind of waiting. Oh, Josh, gosh, when is Randy Moss going to, you know, when is he going to spill the beans?
Right.
When is he going to explode? We keep waiting for it. The media keeps asking about it. Fans keep wondering, how's he doing? Is he going to get pissed off? And the fact is that he hasn't done anything. Maybe he's not going to. We'll have to wait and find out and see how the season progresses and whether or not that emotion and that frustration actually builds. I just thought it was kind of early. Especially the Cowboys are 3-1. They lost a game that, you know, you mm-hmm. could see them losing, although they were a double-digit point favorite this last week, and they were playing at home. They probably shouldn't
shocked.
Have lost the
I
game.
Really, I really was shocked that they lost
that
game.
Yeah, they probably should not have lost the game. But
I wasn't shocked that it was close, but shocked that they lost.
But the fact is that they weren't going undefeated. Nobody's going undefeated this year. And so mm-hmm. because of that, I mean, isn't it a little bit early and a little bit ill-timed for T.O. to open up his yap and to get frustrated all of a sudden?
Yes, very much so. Especially, like I said, in a game where he had the ball thrown his way almost 20 times.
Yeah, well.
Get rid of me. Trade me. Release me.
Okay. I would, if I were Jerry Jones, I would.
You'd have to think about it, although he's just got incredible talent. So how much do you put up with? So let me get back to the, talking a little bit more about the 49ers here, because as you see what they've done over the 4 weeks here at a 2-2 record, they opened up with a loss, a 10-point loss against Arizona. And I think Arizona, even though they got whacked this week by the Jets, and boy, did they get hammered, I kind of felt like that was a little bit of an aberration. I really thought Arizona was a better team than what I saw on television on Sunday. And San Francisco was right in that game. It was a 23-13 game back on September the 7th. And then they had an overtime win over Seattle on the road, no less. And while I think Seattle, because of all of their injuries, is down right now, it's still winning on the road for a team like San Francisco, where nothing is expected. That's a good win for them. Then they pounded an absolutely horrid Detroit team and beat them pretty good by 31-13. I could see why San Francisco fans and the 49ers themselves would be disappointed with the egg that they laid against New Orleans this weekend. So, you know, at 2-2, they probably considered themselves to be somewhat fortunate after 4 weeks. I'm not sure that anybody out there considers this to be a W, though, on Sunday.
On either side.
Well, that's true. I'm not sure either team can count it right now. Put it in the win column. I don't think either team can right now.
Yeah. Well, you know, San Francisco last year was everyone's chic pick to not only make the playoffs but possibly be a Super Bowl contender. That fell flat almost as soon as the season started. So I think that's the other stigma that they have attached to them right now, that, that if anybody knows anything about them, that's what they know. It's like, oh, yeah, that was the team that was supposed to be good last year. And like you said, now they're sort of at 500 coming out of the gates here. And I think that's probably, you know what, that's probably about what should be expected of that of this team at this point.
By the way, I'm looking at the 49ers' notes here, and it appears another former Patriot's going to be activated for the first time this year.
Tully Bantakane?
Yep. So it looks like he'll be able to play against his former team. So we have J.T. O'Sullivan and Tully Bantakane.
So intrigue on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, there you go. Vengeance. Little intrigue on both sides of the ball on Sunday.
Well,
for what it's worth.
Tully Bantakane, in this system when he was a Patriot, was used properly and was they got the most out of him.
Sure, I thought so.
You know, especially for a guy who was one of those guys that had a hard time sticking in the beginning. He was active, he was practice squad, he was on and off. And then finally he made some contributions before he signed for the big money and went back to his home state and his hometown, basically.
Yeah, he was a Cal Bear, so that's
right. So that's basically going back to where he grew up. Interesting that the other guy, J.T. O'Sullivan, same way, guy who couldn't stick anywhere, and now finally he's found a home. But I don't think Bantakane has kind of lived up to the expectations when he signed that big deal going into San Francisco. And to be honest with you, some guys are system players. You know, that's a trite expression that people like to use, but I think in a lot of cases it's true. That's why it's used. And in Tully's case, he was used well in this system, and I don't know if he's in exactly the right fit defensively in San Francisco.
Well, even at 2-2, I don't know if anybody actually took a glance at this today. 49ers are in first place in the NFC West.
Well, if you're gonna if you're gonna have a chance at 2-2, that's the division you want to be.
I was about to say. So you know,
the Rams are horrible.
And John Krumpecker from the Chronicle just told us. He said, you know, the expectation here of this team is to finish at 500 or better for Mike Nolan to save his job this year. Right now, you'd have to say they're on course, and thankful that you're right that they're probably residing in the division in which they are, simply because they'll have a chance if they can stay near 500.
Right. I mean, like you said, Seattle with their injuries, they're sort of not playing up to expectations.
I don't know that they'll ever be able to play this year. I mean, they're in a bad way.
St. Louis is one of the most atrocious teams at this point. Now who knows? Maybe Haslett can turn things around. They're still 12 games left in the season.
And how good or bad is Arizona?
Yeah, you know, after they destroyed Miami, I think it was in week two, they put up the 31 points and held Miami to, like, less than a touchdown.
31-10.
Yeah.
I think it was 31-10, yeah.
At the time, we all thought, well, it's Miami, but they looked good doing it. And as we found out, Miami's not maybe as bad as everyone thought they were
That's why looking at 56-35 this weekend was like, what the heck is that?
Yeah, as impressive as their offense was, moving up and down the field, scoring touchdowns, their defense was equally horrible.
Oh, man.
They could have. How many points did they score?
They scored 35 and lost.
Yeah, you should win games.
Should
in
win
the NFL
with 35.
Yeah. 28, you should win games.
Sure. Most games.
Yeah. So it's disappointing. Their offense, I think, is doing well under Warner. They're putting up the points. Their defense is what's the problem right now.
Wow, I found the whole thing just kind of bizarre. And you know, talking about the Cardinals, and this leaves the 49ers in a pretty good situation. I mean, they're 2-2. You know, it's a home game for them, so I'm sure they feel like we have at least an opportunity to put ourselves on the right track again, and all the better to try to do it against a team that a lot of folks still think is a playoff team. Mm-hmm. John Krumpacker himself said that his expectation of the Patriots is before the year is done that this team will still be in the playoffs, regardless of the change in overall feel with Tom Brady being out and Matt Castle being in.
Well, let's say Seattle goes down the road they've been going down so far. St. Louis continues to go down that road. Who else is in that division?
It's Arizona, really. That's it.
That's it.
That's it. That's your competition.
So it's it's two teams going against each other if things continue as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And 500 could win that division.
8-8 could.
Well, 7-9 could win that division.
It's possible. Didn't 8-8 win the division like a couple of years ago?
That particular division?
I think so.
Might have been.
It's within the last two or three years, 8-8 won that West division.
We need Russell Baxter. Quick.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we got to find Russell. He'll tell us on Thursday. Anyway. All right, so there you go. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Now that we got our ducks in a row, Eric Scalavino from PFW is here with us for a little bit. Let's get a timeout in here. We'll read some emails, and we'll get into hour number two inside the playbook.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
Hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef.
Three kinds of salsa.
Fresh lettuce.
Guacamole.
Cookies and
brownies.
Homemade tortilla chips.
Everything.
Well, we get Qdoba catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties.
Soccer games.
Birthday parties.
Baby shower. For my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh.
Affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Hey, this is Hall of Famer John Hanna here. Let me tell you about the game with the greats. Have you ever wondered what former football players talk about when we're watching a game? Well, now you can find out for yourself at the Game with the Greats on October 5th at Gillette Stadium. Watch the Patriots take on the 49ers in the Fidelity Investments Clubhouse, along with me and a bunch of other Patriot alumni. Guys like newly inducted Hall of Famer Andre Tippett and Patriots Hall of Famers Ben Coates, Stanley Morgan, Steve Nelson, and Steve Grogan will be there. Tickets are limited because they're only $40. Visit the Patriots.com homepage and click on Alumni for more information. We're all going to be at the Game with the Greats. Where will you be?
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday. I'm John Rook. Welcome to the program. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly is with us today. It's not Thursday. It's Tuesday. I guess a little under the weather today from what I had it explained to me. Is that right? He didn't come in today? Oh, it's a oh.
Holiday, yeah.
Jewish holiday.
Jewish holiday.
I didn't even think of that. And, of course, yeah, figures. My wife is Jewish, and I don't even think of these things, so I'll probably be.
Oh, you're going to get
I
it.
I will get
you're
it.
You're going to hear
home.
It when you get home.
I'll get it. I'll get it today. Okay. That's.
And I'm here on my day off, so we're all confused. Every,
what is up with
is right
and,
up
see, this is what you get when you come in on a day off.
Well, that's, hey, you know, I asked for it, so.
Well, that's what happens. You can't, you know, I, that's why, you know, when I tell people I got a day off, I try not to come into the office or I try not to make contact because
oh, yeah.
I know it's just going to, you know, you're going to get dragged down.
Even when I'm in the office, I try not to make contact.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
There we you go. Know the guys I work with.
All too well. let's get a couple of emails in here and see if we can help out. Again, webradio@patriots.com is the email address. We did have somebody, I guess, phone in momentarily to say that in 04 and 06, the division was won with the NFC West was won with a 9-7 record.
Mm-hmm.
And then in another year, the wild
04,
card.
I think they said 8-8.
04, 8-8 was a wild card. So an 8-8 record certainly has got you in the playoff hunt.
Yeah. It can get you to the playoff as a wild card. I'm not sure if it's ever happened as a division winner, though. If the divisions have ever been so poor that 8-8 has
as
gotten
a division.
In.
Seems like that there was that was a distinct possibility in one or both of those years that were mentioned until they turned it on at the end
yeah.
and ended up winning a ninth. But that 8-8 would have perhaps potentially won that division
mm-hmm.
had it turned out that way.
Yeah,
which is remarkable. I just don't think anybody should be allowed to be in the playoffs unless you're at least 8-8. I mean, you know,
it's tough, tough to regulate, though.
Well, it is tough to regulate, number one. Number two, you know, the NFL does have a little bit tougher road to hoe than teams in other professional sports mm-hmm. leagues when you have only 12 of your, 32 teams making the postseason.
Or the idea that was floated during the combine this past year and during the offseason was for the upcoming owners' meetings at the time was maybe potentially reseeding the playoffs so that if you're an 8-8 division winner and you're a 10-6 or an 11-5
wild card,
you get as a wild card with a better record, get the home game.
I actually liked that idea.
Yeah. The argument against it, which they ultimately didn't pass because of it, was they said, well, you could be in a really tough division and you're beating up on your division opponents
mm-hmm.
and you go about .500 in your division and then you go about .500 against everyone else. And if you're in a weaker division, maybe you go 10-6 because, or 11-5 because you're playing against lesser competition. That's why they gave it the edge to the division winner because they felt ultimately it's tougher to win your own division than it is to pile up that kind of record
yeah,
as a wild card.
I can see that point of view too.
I can kind of see it, but I think there has to be some sort of human element factored in to say, look, you know when a team is really a bad 8-8 team, or if they're in a division that's really tough and they're going 8-8 because of that, you can tell who's a better team.
Generally speaking. By the end of the year, you should be able to tell who is. Yeah, I kind of agree with that, which is one of the reasons why I think maybe they should reseed after the playoff rounds.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to even it out.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just think it does open the door to have teams who would normally have the home game if they don't get it to complain and say, well, who are you to say that we're not that good?
On the flip side, in the AFC last year, we had a Cleveland team at 10-6 that for all practical reason was playing as well as anybody at the end of last regular season
and
missed out on the playoffs.
Right. Yeah, I felt they should have gotten in last year, but they needed to win one more game.
And they didn't do it.
So
you know, there's an example of playing well, playing pretty well within your division and missing out altogether.
Mm.
So there's got to be some way to kind of even it out. You've got to get in the dance, I guess. And, you know, Cleveland certainly is responsible for that. But,
yeah.
You know, the 49ers, I would say, whether they win or lose this Sunday, if they can keep their head right at the break-even mark, then they should be competitive right to the very end
mm-hmm.
in terms of the potential winning the NFC West. And that's
as good a shot as anyone else.
That's the life
division.
That they lead this year. That's just the way the year breaks out.
Yeah.
So, all right. To the emails here. Johnny in Ireland says, I know it's a bit early to be thinking about these things, but how many of the starting Patriots do you think will make it to this year's Pro Bowl?
Ooh, oh, boy.
That's pretty early.
Yeah.
He says his guess is 3. Mayo, Moss, and Hobbs. Says you guys are doing a great job. Keep up the good work, Johnny in Ireland. I have to take the fifth on that one. I don't even know that I can make a. First of all, I don't even think you can get an accurate picture on a team until you get into the second half of the season. So
yeah.
You have to go by week 8.
Right. I think you at least need to go week 8. By week 4, once you've played 4 games, I think you sort of have an idea which direction the team is heading. By week 8. Or 9, like you said, I think you have a better understanding of what type of team you have at that point.
Right.
It's just too tough at this juncture to you know, I mean, it's only a quarter of the season that's gone by. You still have a lot of football left to be played.
I don't know that there's anybody on the Patriots right now that I would say that's even worthy of mention. After having, what was it, eight Pro Bowlers last year? I mean, could you legitimately say anybody right now is, I mean, maybe someone like Ty Warren, maybe someone like Vince Wilfork.
John, I don't think you can say that anyone in the NFL is worthy of the Pro Bowl at this point.
No, no, I think,
too
you know,
early.
You just
it's
don't
just
know.
Too early. I mean, teams like, I'll just take the teams that are undefeated right now, Buffalo and Tennessee, are 4-0. At this point, that's impressive. But how many times have we seen teams go 4, maybe 5-0, finish the season
8-8, or worse?
Or worse. You know, it's just way too early to tell. And guys who are playing well right now can do horrible for the next 12 games, 10 games, and all of a sudden what looked like a great start to the season is a horrible finish. Right. So it's just I understand the person who wrote in wants to, you know, try to find a silver lining
at
things.
Look at positive performances and who's played well thus far and who, you know, has been a surprise, all that kind of stuff. But it's just
way too early.
Yeah, it's just so hard. I mean, have there been positive performances? Sure, we've seen a few. And Mayo is certainly one. Let's start with Gerard Mayo. I mean, the fact
checking
is
the team in tackles.
The fact is we haven't talked much about him, but it's probably because he's doing his job. And so, you know, he's right there filling every expectation and maybe then some that this team had for him. He made Junior Seau expendable.
Mayo.
Well,
I really believe that Seau was coming back until.
I still think there's a chance.
Well, if somebody gets hurt.
I still think there's a chance.
If somebody gets hurt, yes. If they lose an inside linebacker somewhere to injury.
Yeah.
If Bruschi goes down or Mayo goes down or what, I mean, somebody would have to go down.
Yeah.
And then I think that he would come back in a pinch.
I still think there is a chance that happens. It's still early enough in the game, that, in the season, that I think that's possible. But Mayo, like you said, I think has lived up to that expectation and that hype that associated with him being the 10th pick in the draft.
And if the team obviously has some success and can compete, you know, for the division championship, then you'd have to say that Mayo could be potentially contender on down the line for, you know, defensive rookie of the year.
Yeah, again, it's way too early to start thinking about that, but if the trend continues, I haven't really seen any other defensive rookies at this point who are standing out that much. But
he's only standing out because we're talking about him, and frankly, he's you know, he's been out of the spotlight. He's been in there basically every play, which is certainly, I think, worthy of mention at this stage of the game.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. People weren't even sure he was going to start the season. He's definitely...
People were panning the pick when they drafted him at number 7.
Well, I think you'll get that every year, no matter who you pick. But had a chance to meet with him today, actually, which is rare because Tuesdays are a player's day off. But he's in here pretty much every Tuesday watching film.
On his day off.
On his day off, getting a quick workout in, doing the extra things that he feels are necessary to be what he wants to be. And he has said he wants to be great. And I think just the few minutes I had to talk to him today, he gave me that impression. I mean, I've talked to him a few times before, but you really can tell that he is serious about his job. And about becoming a better player. You don't see any other players coming in on Tuesday. Once in a while, maybe you do. But he's consistently here on Tuesdays, he told me. This is his life. This is what he loves to do. And he's young. He's in a great position. He's on a team with great veterans, great coaches. And I think those dividends are paying off rather quickly. And you can see this isn't an easy defense to learn, John. And he's a rookie. His college coach, position coach, John Chavis at Tennessee, was also their defensive coordinator. When the Patriots drafted him, I had a chance to talk to Chavis about Mayo. And the thing that stands out to me even 6 months later from that interview was he said, I was asking him, you know, about his work ethic and his dedication to film study and that kind of thing. And he said, listen, if Gerard came back to Tennessee today and wanted to coach the linebackers, he could do a better job at it than I can do.
Wow.
Which tells you something. I mean, you know, coaches like to talk in hyperbole about some of their players sometimes, but when you actually see what the kid has done this far in his career here and the amount of snaps he's gotten to play and the production he's had, it's easy to see why John Chavis said something like that, because – the kid is producing, and the way he takes that dedication to becoming better and wanting to study and wanting to learn from the veterans on this team. And you know, it's again, it's too early to say that he's Rookie of the Year or Canton bound, but he's certainly on the right track at this point.
That's very cool. Good stuff, Eric. Good stuff. Now, I would assume this is what? This is for next week's PFW?
For next week's PFW. Yeah.
Okay. In particular now, is this just more of a focus on him, or is it just kind of like a what's up with Gerard type of thing and how he's, you know, basically adapting to professional life?
Well, we wanted to do a feature we got Terrence Wheatley a few weeks ago, about a month ago. He was the second round pick. We wanted to try to do as many of the rookies as we could eventually. Obviously, the higher picks, the ones who made the team. And this was actually Fred Kirsch's idea. He said, you know, we should try to...
Let's give him credit then.
Absolutely. It was a great idea. He said we should try to convince Gerard to try to get us to go and sit with him while he watches film one day and just kind of see the whole process of what's involved and the time he takes and, you know, just that. And also, it's a great time after 4 weeks. You know, he's played the whole preseason, had a whole training camp behind him, just to kind of catch up and see, you know, how he's feeling in general.
Has he hit the rookie wall?
He actually used that term himself. He brought that up and saying, you know, at this point, played 4 preseason games, have played 3 regular season games. We had the bye week, so he's 8 weeks into it.
He's getting ready to end his season.
Well, he said, right now I'm thinking what kind of bowl game we're going to be in, because at Tennessee, that's right. That's what they were thinking about. And he's like, you know, I'm really trying hard not to hit that rookie wall. You know, which kind of tough coming in on your day off and working out and watching film. But, you know, when you talk to him, you can tell he's a smart kid, smart player. I don't think he's going overboard with what he's trying to do. He's playing it smart. You know, he's not here, you know, 12 hours on his day off. I mean, he's coming in, he's getting his work done, but I think he's being smart about it. I know there's the threat that you'll burn yourself out too quickly. But so far, I haven't seen any evidence of that, and he seems to be doing everything right, the right way, saying the right things, and looks like, by all accounts, the Patriots made the right pick.
Did you have a chance to talk to him any at all about how, you know, and this is something that we've actually had, you know, fans here and in message boards all over the place talk about how Patriots really have been a hit or miss proposition in the draft. Has he talked any at all about the pressure of being a number one pick, especially in light of the fact that, you know, there have been several high picks in recent vintage that just haven't panned out? Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't talk about that exact topic today, but he's addressed that in the past about, you know, the high expectation being a top 10 pick and coming here. And I think he said it best when he answered it by saying, look, I just want to be great. Doesn't matter where he was drafted. His whole idea coming into the NFL was I want to be the best I can be. Mm-hmm. And the best I can be, I feel, is that level. And so I think pressure in almost all cases is self-exerted.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't put the pressure on yourself, or if you challenge yourself, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks.
I think he's
kind of taken that approach. And look, if he wants to be great, if he's putting that pressure on himself, he knows what he can deal with and what he can't. So I don't think the kid worries too much about what anyone else says, and I think that's the right approach to take. And I think all his coaches will probably tell him the same thing. Don't worry about the outside distractions. Worry about your job, your assignment, what you have to do in this meeting, in this practice, in this game. Don't worry about what anyone else thinks.
Anything specifically about his fellow rookies on this Patriots team?
He talked a little bit about how in his position there are a couple of rookie linebackers, and that their position coach, Matt Patricia, is very dedicated and taking extra time, like maybe even a half hour before and after meetings, when the rest of the veteran linebackers go off and do their thing, that he stays with them to put the time in necessary to get them up to speed and to get them to the level of comfort that they feel they need to get out of their rookies at this point. And because, like we said, John, it's not the easiest defense to learn, as you can see by there have been veterans who've come in who've had similar recently and not so recently who've come in and have had familiarity with the 3-4 and even with this particular 3-4. And haven't had quite the success that Gerard Mayo's had so far. So I think it's a testament to not only to him, but just to the coaching staff and the personnel department to make that pick and say, look, we're going to take a guy at number 10, where, like you said, they've gotten banned for some of their picks in the past, but they felt really good about this one, and I think they've hit on it. You know, it's... you've covered the NFL long enough to know the draft is a hit or miss thing, even in the
always
first round.
Always is. Always is.
Look, Tom Brady, sixth round.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could argue that that was a, you know, you could argue that the Patriots should have done a better job and picked him earlier, or someone else should have picked him up.
You know, and maybe that played a little bit into Kevin O'Connell getting drafted in the third round.
Maybe.
Maybe they felt like, hey, look, we know this kid is going
to
be good.
Maybe we need
We know someone will take him by fourth or fifth round. Maybe we need to take him now.
Yeah.
We got the extra third round pick. Why not? Why not?
That's the risk that you take. Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe in a normal year they wouldn't have taken him that high in the third round where they took Sean Crable.
Right.
They would have said, well, we'll wait till the fourth and try to take a risk, but they had the extra third. Maybe they figured, hey, what the heck?
Yeah.
Let's get him now. The draft is so, I mean, even the blue chippers who end up in the top 10, you really don't even know what you get in there. Look at, what was it, 99 was the year, I think, that was it McNabb, Cade McNown.
Mm-hmm. Everybody came out.
Akili Smith.
Yeah.
There were like five quarterbacks that year that
right.
were first-round picks.
Yeah.
How many of them are still in the league?
One? Two?
Yeah.
Off the top of my head. I'm missing somebody, I think, but yeah. Yeah, that's true.
And those guys were considered blue-chip franchise quarterbacks.
Blue-chip locks, yeah, right.
So, you know, for fans to say, well, you know, the Patriots haven't hit so well in the last... Overall, I think they do a decent job of drafting. Yeah,
At least right now, you'd have to say as well as pretty much anybody else.
Look, last year's draft, Merriweather was really the only one who came out of that draft. But
admittedly, that was more miss than hit.
That was more miss than hit. But I think going in, I think you could tell just from the body language and by some of the things that were said that it wasn't really the greatest draft. The Patriots really weren't excited about anybody in particular, in that draft.
And some drafts are like that.
And some drafts are like that.
Some drafts are not particularly deep. Some drafts don't have quarterbacks. Some drafts are lousy for running back. Some drafts aren't explosive. I mean, just the way it is.
Right. And some years, one particular position isn't really as heavy as another, and maybe you need that particular position, and if it's not a heavy in that draft, and you don't have the pick where you can get the player you
it's
think is the
best. It's not like going to a grocery store where you know the shelves are going to get restocked.
Right.
You know, if they're out of your favorite brand of coffee. It's
right.
Just, it's the draft is not like that, obviously.
So. Look, if the Pats had been high enough and he was still available, I think they would have taken Patrick Willis last year. And Patrick Willis ended up with the 49ers, as you know,
right.
Became Rookie of the Year.
He's one of the reasons why I asked John Krempecker about him, because he seems to be having a pretty decent year.
And
even in the loss this last week, he had, you know, nine tackles, I think, for the Niners. So.
And I think that bears itself out when they had a similar pick this year, had a similar need, and they went with a guy who's, Bill Belichick said it this week, is a very similar player. There are a lot of similarities between Mayo and Patrick Willis. Young, fast, explosive, hard-hitting guys who are smart.
And if you get Willis last year, you don't get Mayo this year, most likely.
Yeah, most likely you don't. Right.
It turns out like that. But, hey, if candy and nuts, you know, you know the saying.
But either way, they would have ended up with a good young linebacker.
At some point, yeah. Either way. Either way you go, you end up with a good one. That's very, very true. All right. Very good story about Gerard Mayo. We'll look forward to seeing that next week's edition. Christian from Boston sends this email. He goes, the NFC East, guys, what do you think about it? Is Dallas overrated? Why did they only run 11 times in the game? Where was Felix Jones? He says, Creighton bleeps. Are the Giants the best in that division? Dallas is overrated, although, as you kind of talked about, and I watched the whole game, much to my chagrin, because I had Dallas in my survival pool this week. So I'm now out.
Oh.
Thank you very much.
Out in week four. Tough.
Yeah. You know what, though? I mean, we had... almost, I think I mentioned this last week, we had almost 800 people involved in this pool that I was involved in. And after the Cowboys got beat this week, after 4 weeks, you know how many are left out of 800?
I'll say 100.
About.
Oh, really?
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Nobody can predict
it. So someone's going to win this thing by week eight.
Yes. Yes. Somebody's going to pretty quickly.
Wow.
Pretty quickly. I mean, it's amazing. It just shows you how volatile things are in the league right now. You just can't accurately predict. Here's something else that I'd like to ask our listeners. If you've got a good way to, you know, play the games, as the case is, if you like to for a little fun, if you know what I'm saying, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, know what I mean? If you got a system, you got a formula, love to hear it. Because I don't think there is one. I mean, you can look at the odds, you can go online, you can do all the ESPN Insider stuff, you can subscribe to the tout sheets, whatever. It doesn't matter. Dallas was a universal double-digit pick at home against Washington this week, and they got beat.
I got a strategy for you.
What?
Visceral.
Gut?
Go with your gut every time.
I did!
Oh, I know, but...
I went with my gut, and I got beat!
But I couldn't pick against them. I wanted to pick against the Cowboys. I wanted to go someplace else. I wanted to take another team. Maybe
that's
use the Cowboys.
Right there, that your gut saying you should have gone with someone else. But you didn't. You went with what everyone was saying. Everyone was saying the Cowboys were going to win.
It was overwhelming. There was no other choice. And I went against it because there was no other choice for me to make. The Cowboys were standing there, like they were on top of a pedestal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with you. I thought they were going to blow the Redskins out, but to answer Christian's question, I don't think they're overrated. I think they are the best team in the NFC East, and the NFC East is probably at this point the toughest division in football right now. All four teams are competitive.
I don't think there's any doubt about
all
that.
All four teams are in the hunt. I do think Dallas is the cream of the crop, though, talent-wise. The Giants, I still think they're kind of in the honeymoon stage with having won the Super Bowl. I think they're going to come down to earth at some point. But I didn't expect Washington to be as competitive as they were, especially after laying an egg against the Giants in Week 1.
I have to admit, Jason Campbell continues to impress me.
He's getting better.
He was sharp.
He's getting better.
And Clinton Portis had, I'm still waiting for Dallas to tackle him.
Oh, I mean, that was, yeah, I mean.
They could not tackle the guy.
I know.
I
saw probably about, I saw most of that game. I had the TV on and was reading on and off and, kept looking up. And I in third and the fourth quarter, I'm saying, how is Dallas still not winning this game? And you're right. They couldn't.
And it just got away from them.
Santana Moss was catching.
Santana Moss went nuts.
He went crazy.
He has great games in the past, at Texas Stadium against the Cowboys. He's had very good games in the past.
The Eagles, Brian Westbrook, as long as he stays healthy, that team has a chance. I mean, he is that offense.
I think you could see three teams in that division make the playoffs.
Yeah, especially when you have a horrible West division.
That's what I mean.
You have the
I'm not so sure it's going to come from the Central either, to be honest.
The North and the
and the Central
and the South or
South. Yeah. I'm thinking AFC Central.
The
South,
I think
North and South.
Let's see. The South, I'd say that I'm going to go with New Orleans winning the South.
Probably.
Carolina, it looks like they want to make some noise.
Yeah, Carolina. I mean, that's
Tampa Bay. I really don't think they're that great a team. They made the playoffs last year, but I didn't think they deserved to be in the playoffs last year. Who else do we have there?
Atlanta,
rookie quarterback. Not going to happen this year. So, yeah, I think it's entirely possible three of those.
Could happen. Certainly. Speaking of watching games over the weekend, Alejandro says, did you watch games over this weekend, or do you try to stay away from football during a bye week?
That's
a good question, actually.
I watched the Arizona Jets game. That was the first game that I had on in my market. And then, I had the Cowboys game.
Yeah, watch the Jets.
Actually, I had picture-in-picture. I was at my parents' house for a little while.
Nice. There you go.
Because I have digital at my house, and you can't get picture-in-picture on that.
Okay.
So we had the Denver-KC game on, which turned out to be
pretty decent game, yeah.
Which I didn't think was going to be, but I always, anytime there are two games on, I'll have picture-in-picture on. It doesn't really matter. I just want to see what's going on. But
yeah, right.
I had it on. I was reading the newspaper, doing some other things, but I kept it. I was actually on Saturday. Great day for college football. Love Saturdays. It doesn't matter bye week or not.
I was very happy that it rained this weekend because my assignment was over Friday, since I had the Friday night UConn Louisville game, so I knew that coming back on Saturday. Normally, my son plays fall baseball, so I try to go out to his games on the weekends. And I knew that it was a deluge around here, so because of the rain, I'm like, thank God,
Saturday,
his game's rained out, and I can watch college football on Saturdays. And actually, I thought the same thing about Sunday because without the Patriots, there wasn't any pressing need, because it's always like my wife always gives me crap for like, oh yeah, you got to watch the Patriots. Oh, I'm sorry, it's part of your wink wink work.
Yeah,
Which it is, but you always get that kind of garbage from your significant other. And I was looking forward to watching football without the pressure of having to
really
pay attention.
Same way, you watch football differently when you're not watching it.
Yes,
work.
That's right.
It's more enjoyable
it's more
to
fun.
Just sit back and watch it that way.
It's more fun to actually sit there and say, "Hey, can I have another bag of
chips?" Especially when you have. Right, because sometimes you're worried about looking away for a second because you're like, what did I miss? Something happens, and you're like, what did I miss? I didn't see it. You don't see it that well in the replay. At least this way when you're home and you're not really concentrating, you can just, But it was a great weekend. A lot of upsets in the NFL, too.
Yeah, I just the volatility is just continues to
continues to be rather impressive, I think, over what's going on.
Well, that's what makes it exciting, though. I mean, you really don't know, like in your knockout pool, you really don't know who's going to win week to week.
Right.
Even in games like Dallas and Washington, where you think it's
that's why, lopsided. Like, you know, I'm going to be a glutton for punishment, and I've got a chance to get in on another knockout pool right at midseason. They do a midseason one in this group that I'm with.
Mid-season. Started at midseason?
Started at midseason.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you have a better idea of where teams are?
And I probably should have waited just to jump in on that one, but obviously the rewards on down the line are greater if you get in at the first of the season.
Uh-huh. Right. No,
for entertainment purposes
only,
of course.
Yes, yeah. Greater entertainment purposes at the end of the season.
That's exactly right. Okay. Stripper sends us a note. He says, if you're Romeo Crennel, would you put Quinn in over Anderson right now?
If I'm Romeo Crennel, I lose about 200 pounds first.
Oh,
then I consider...
come on. Now, that's not right.
Oh, come on. This is what we do here. We love Romeo.
No, that's what the PFW guys do. Come on.
I know. I'm so used to being on that show. I felt like I had to take a shot for no reason. No, the question he's really asking is, was Derek Anderson a flash in the pan?
Yeah.
You know, when you draft a quarterback that high, as they did with Quinn, it's really only a matter of time, no matter how well that other quarterback is playing, before that guy gets in. I mean, look what happened with Philip Rivers in San Diego. They had Drew Brees, who was playing out of his mind by the time they drafted Philip Rivers. But you know what? Who's the quarterback in San Diego now?
Philip Rivers. Philip Rivers.
Yeah, they sent Drew Brees out of town. Why? They invested a first-round pick in Drew Brees, in Philip Rivers.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime, it's a similar situation, I think, in Cleveland, where you have a guy who was playing well when they drafted the rookie with the number one pick or their first-round pick. Derek Anderson just happened to be playing well at the time, and you couldn't really say, "Well, we're going to yank you now," because they had a chance and they should have made the playoffs last year with Derek Anderson as their quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But it's rare that a rookie quarterback, even a first-round rookie quarterback, is going to start right away. Matt Ryan is an exception. Drew Bledsoe was an exception. There are exceptions. But guys like Steve McNair, for instance, was a first-round mm-hmm. quarterback pick. But he sat for 3-4 years before he got a start.
I believe so, yeah.
Learned for a while and even had a lengthy career after that. But I just think when you draft a player that high at that position – if there's a quarterback controversy, the guy who gets drafted is going to win out every time.
Sure.
Eventually.
Generally, yeah. Because nobody wants to be, as you suggested, I mean, nobody wants to be wrong, especially with a quote-unquote franchise player like a quarterback obviously is. It's a matter of time before he takes over. With the way that the Browns have struggled to this point in time, frankly, the way that I would answer that question is, you know, Anderson had a fabulous year last year. Even if you don't think that he kind of caught lightning in a bottle, even if you foresee, you know, enough to where you think he could kind of quote-unquote snap out of it, I think because of the way the team is right now, you need to keep – this is where, if you're a head coach, I think you got to look at the bigger picture. You got to play PR director here a little bit. You have to realize that, you know, hey, you know, your job could also be on the line. What could it hurt by putting Brady Quinn in there? And the answer is, I think, very little.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're coming close to that point where they realize
– well, they better not wait too much longer.
I don't think they're going to. That's my point. I think – look, ever since Quinn got drafted – the buzz has been, when's he going to start? You know, look, Charlie Fry saw the writing on the wall. He left town and went to Seattle.
Here's something good. You know, Brady Quinn's got these commercials out there. He does commercials for, like, athletic wear, and he does one, I think, for, Propel
one of the,
water
one of the
or
drinks.
One of the drinks or something like that. Yep. And so he's running on a treadmill or something, and I'm sitting there with my 13-year-old son. He goes, how come Brady Quinn's got these commercials? He doesn't even play.
Yeah.
That was what he said.
Right.
And I said, well...
yet.
I think,
he doesn't play.
I think he's still a big enough name, and I think people realize that he's going to play
right.
at some point, and maybe even very soon. He's still a marketable commodity.
Right.
So,
and like I said, I think Steve McNair is a perfect example of that. You draft a guy in the first round to be your quarterback. Maybe you're not in a rush to get him in there, and when you have the luxury to say, okay, fine, you go in there now, you can do it at your discretion. And I think the way Anderson has played, it's given Crennel that option to say, all right, Brady, you're going to be the quarterback. We know you're going to be the quarterback eventually, but for now, this is what's better for the team. And, you know, some rookies respond better to being thrown into the fire than others. I think Quinn could have handled it last year if he'd had to, but I don't think it hurts either that he had to wait a little while.
No, I don't think so.
And, you know, who knows? Maybe it helped fire him up a little bit, that when he finally does get the chance, he'll be that much more determined. Who knows?
Todd sends this email by saying, are there any running backs in the history of the league that didn't start out their careers great? He says, if Maroney isn't great now, he's never going to be.
That's a good question. We'll have to give us a minute to ponder that.
As I sit here and as you're right, as I kind of ponder that, you're talking about great running backs in the history of the NFL. Did they not start out great? In other words, did they gradually get better?
Right.
I can see his point.
A quarterback develops into a great quarterback.
Yes, and a running back would develop into a great running back. My initial reaction is that there are probably few. I'm trying to think of somebody that would be considered a great running back that didn't start out that way.
That's a great question.
Wow. I guess I'd really have to go back and do some research. I can only go by the teams that I followed as a kid, which were largely the Cowboys and the Oilers. They all had great running backs that started out that way. I mean, Calvin Hill for the Cowboys. Dwayne Thomas started out great, didn't end up great, but he started out great. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Earl Campbell for the Oilers.
Yeah, Emmitt Smith was a starter
Emmitt
right
Smith
away.
Emmitt Smith was a great starter right away. He was great.
How about someone like, I didn't really know him that well. They didn't follow his career, but Otis Anderson. Mostly with the Cardinals, ended up with the Giants, won that Super Bowl.
No, you know what? That's not a bad pick. I don't know that anybody would consider him a great running back.
Yeah, that's my.
But I think he's somebody who did improve as time went on, and certainly became more valuable to his team.
Yeah.
As time went on, maybe his veteranness. How about for the Patriots? How about Antoine Smith? You know, by the time he was done, he was better, I think, than a serviceable back. And I wouldn't call him a great back, but I'd say he was a very good back.
I think he had peaks and valleys. He started off very strong in Buffalo as a rookie, and then obviously sank because that's why they released him. Had some resurgence here in New England.
Yeah.
Was in the right system at the right time.
I think that's why.
And then wore out his welcome here. Not that he was a bad guy or anything, but he had played out his potential. Mm-hmm. I think he wasn't going to. They knew what they were going to get, and they felt they could get something better. And obviously, they made the trade for Corey Dillon. And,
right, and then obviously they
improved
out
well.
The situation.
Right,
but I think to Todd's question here, I think largely, it doesn't necessarily mean that if a running back doesn't start out great, that he will never be. What I think is that if a running back doesn't start out great and needs to get better and hopefully can mature. He's got to be in a system that will allow him to utilize his talents to their full capability. Now, to that extent, is Lawrence Maroney in the system that would allow him to utilize what talents he has to their fullest extent? I would argue right now, no.
Why?
First of all, the Patriots need a Corey Dillon type to do what they do. I think that's been pretty well documented in this time. They have the third down option in Kevin Falk, so if they need the smaller, shiftier back, they've used him and used him well. I think we've seen already this year to a limited extent that the Patriots are better suited going between the tackles when Lamont Jordan and Sammy Morris bang away inside. Lawrence Maroney can't do that. And whether or not he doesn't want to, or he's not physically capable, or he's not durable enough, and I argue he's not durable enough. That's my greatest fear with Lawrence Maroney. I don't think physically that he's going to be able to stand up to the rigors of being an every down back for this team. The Patriots need to find the bigger, stronger franchise type of hoss, in my estimation, to fulfill the role that they see that a tailback should be. That's why Corey Dillon was so incredibly successful. That's why for a year, year and a half, Antoine Smith was so incredibly successful, because he was fulfilling that role. We've seen that since 2000 when Bill Belichick got here. Lawrence Maroney is not cast properly for the role that the Patriots would like him to play.
Why do you think that is?
Again, because I don't think Maroney is the go between the tackles, hit the hole kind of guy.
I mean, why do you think if that's the case, if what you're saying is the case, why? I mean, he was a first round pick.
Yes, he was.
What was it about him, do you think, that they saw that led them to believe that he could be?
I think they saw his burst. I think they saw his ability in college to hit the hole. I think they saw, you know, his breakaway speed. I don't think what they thought was that he would not be as not be durable. I think
Lawrence
they thought he would be
Bony Maroney.
Yeah, I thought maybe I thought maybe they figured that he would be less.
That they could develop him.
Yeah, that they could develop him to be that kind of back. You know, put some weight on him. Hopefully, you know, get him through their program to where he could be a Corey Dillon with speed. You know, and with the ability to be shot out of a cannon, you know, and hit the hole. And yet what we've seen is him dancing around a lot, and he just doesn't go, you know, upfield when he's supposed to. They took a shot based on his talents, what he portrayed at Minnesota. I don't think he's turning into what they felt like he could turn into.
Mm-hmm.
Just an observation. It's one man's opinion.
Well, it's a great question that Todd posed, though, because it gets me to thinking that position isn't like quarterback or wide receiver where you can have the luxury of sitting for a few years and developing behind someone else.
Well,
whereas, you know, wide receiver, you can be the third wide receiver on a team
and work your way
up to the,
yeah,
to the one or the two.
But
quarterback, you can,
yeah,
have the luxury of sitting behind a veteran, learning an offense. Running back, you're either in it or you're not.
Oh, you're not.
And if you're not, chances are you're not going to be in it for a while. If you're the number two behind a starter.
That's why, Eric, that's why when it came to the draft a couple of years ago, when they had a choice of picking backs, and I don't remember where he was picked, but I thought that the perfect choice for the Patriots was Lendale White.
He went to Tennessee.
Yeah.
At,
where did he go to Tennessee?
Boy, I think he might have gone
he slipped.
Earlier.
No, he slipped behind Maroney.
Did he?
I believe so.
To gender, can you look up Lendale White draft position 2 years ago?
I'm pretty sure that he was picked after Maroney. But I thought at the time that Lendale White would have been the perfect Patriot because, well, look at what he's doing right now for Tennessee.
He started off very slow in Tennessee.
He did.
He had his problems.
He had his problems initially.
And he's starting to fulfill the potential that we saw at
mm-hmm.
USC.
Mm-hmm.
Where at USC he was phenomenal.
He was a man amongst boys. He was a man amongst boys. That combination of the backfield with him and Bush, I still don't know how Texas beat him.
Oh God!
I got an answer for you.
Yeah, Vince Young. Right.
But still, I mean, you know, when you look at it on paper, they shouldn't have done that. They shouldn't have beat them.
No.
With that 1-2 punch and with Leinart at quarterback, please.
No. The speed they had.
There's
receivers.
Not a college team alive around that should have been able to stop him. Yet Texas
that
defense slowed him down.
That defense should have stopped Vince Young.
Should have.
Fourth down run
Should
that
have.
He had for the touchdown.
It's just remarkable. All right, what do we got?
Lendale White was picked 45, 24 spots after
Thank
Lawrence
you.
Okay,
Maroney.
So second round.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
Now, maybe they felt like picking Lendale White at that stage was not, you know, a value pick. But based on what we've seen now, who would you rather have?
It's a tough call because I still think Maroney has the ability to be a feature back.
Hey, Eric, I agree with you there. I think he's got the ability. We're all waiting for him to show it. I don't think he can stay healthy long enough to show the ability. He's fragile.
Well, there's that, but there's also the fact that he's on this team where even without Tom Brady, you have a prolific passing offense.
Again, not the right spot for his talents, as I suggested earlier. I don't know where that spot would be, to be honest with you. The Patriots need a banger.
I suppose I'm struggling with this because, you know, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's
sure.
He's always been, you know, at Minnesota he was and part of a three-man rotation,
and he's a good guy.
And
he's
here,
a good kid.
Right.
And works hard, says and does all the right things. Got no problems with that.
But I'm trying to look at it from, you know, at Minnesota he was with Marion Barber
one year
and one other. I think there was a three-man rotation there.
In that first year they were together. But Barber was 2 years ahead of him.
He
so.
Came to New England. He was rotating with Corey Dillon.
Yeah.
Then last year, Sammy Morris came in, and until he got hurt, they were sort of sharing the carries,
yeah.
And it was working well.
Yeah.
Then he got hurt, and, you know,
and now
had to miss a lot of time.
He's hurt again.
Now he's has basically a five-man rotation.
And he's hurt again.
Well, I know. How long he's out, though.
He can't stay on the field long enough for us to get a read on the guy.
It's true. That's been the frustrating part, and he's admitted it so that he never really had injuries before to worry about, and ever since he's gotten in the NFL, he's had to deal with these nagging injuries that have kept him out and kept him from getting a nice momentum. I think we saw the last six games of last year when he put up those 400-yard games, the end of the regular season,
potential.
Into the playoffs. I think that's what the Patriots saw when they drafted him.
Okay.
I'll buy that ability.
I'll buy that. If he can just stay and hit the hole and the line can hold their block long enough for him to hit that hole and stay north-south rather than the east-west crap that he does, then I think he's got the potential to be right there and be the kind of back the Patriots hoped he would be. But it hasn't happened with any consistency at all.
And I was hoping that after that, you know, and he even said it too in the offseason, those last few games gave him a momentum that he wanted to carry forward into this season.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, you can't keep that momentum going if you're not on the field with, 100% healthy.
Right.
It's a great question. And I want us to think about that a little more because there has to be a case where a running back
didn't start out great and became great.
And became very, very, very good. Even if not great, but at least consistent, reliable, someone dependable. It's a great question. We're going to have to think about it more.
Yeah, you'd have to go back into the annals of NFL history. I don't even know if the NFL films guys can answer that question sufficiently. You know, I mean,
no, it's a good one to consider, though.
Well, it's a great question to consider. And again, just off the top of my head, all the great backs you can come up with basically started out that way.
Well, and they had the chance to. That's the thing. Like I was saying, if you're a rookie running back, you're either on a team that needs you right away mm-hmm. or you're sitting behind a guy. And if you're sitting behind a guy, 4 or 5 years later when you finally get that chance, I don't know if that position is the right position to do that with, you know? So I think that might be part of the problem. But I'll have to think about it some more.
Interesting. This one comes from Scott. In Shepherdstown, West Virginia. He says, I was just thinking it's possible since Anquan Boldin wants out of Arizona that the Pats will sign him in 09 and then reload the offense to make another push toward the Super Bowl since Brady will be back. I think it's very possible to sign him to a one-year deal and see how it works out. Mm. If this revelation becomes true, could the Pats be more dominant than last year's team?
Kind of like they did with Moss and Kelly Washington and Dante Stallworth last year. They gave him 1 year conditional deals.
I think Anquan Boldin is a.
He's okay, by the way, right?
Yes, he is. He is okay. In fact,
after that hit,
In fact, I heard this morning that if the doctors give him the okay, he'll suit up and play this weekend.
Wow,
which is amazing when you consider the hit that he took. And by the way, the fine and suspension was proper because I don't think it was done on purpose.
Yeah,
but when helmet to helmet, I'm glad the NFL is making a case here.
Before we answer the direct question about him coming to New England, I just want to make a point. Seeing that game and seeing that hit when it happened, less than 30 seconds left in the
game.
Did
you think he was paralyzed?
What? I thought he might have been paralyzed when they got the stretcher out, and I didn't see him moving any extremities or
mm-hmm,
anything.
Mm-hmm.
I got pretty scared that he might have been.
Mm-hmm.
But what bothered me more wasn't so much. I mean, the hit. It's tough to say that the guy was intentionally trying to hit him in the head. I think you're right. A fine and a suspension were proper because you want to set the message that
you have to.
Whether you intended it or not, that's not what we're looking for.
Right.
You have
to
try to think about that.
You have to,
But what bothered me more was that the Cardinals decided to run two more plays after that and throw the ball. I think at that point in the game, you know they had no chance. They had absolutely no chance with 27 seconds left in the game.
Mm-hmm.
To score two touchdowns, kick the, you know they weren't coming back.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't going to win that game. A player, you didn't know at the time, but he could have been paralyzed or at least had something, a broken bone in his neck or something. At that point in the game, why not just kneel on the ball? Just kneel on the ball. End the game right there. You're sitting around in a circle. Everyone's got their helmets off. They're praying for this guy. Their thoughts are obviously not on the game. They're on their teammate. Even the guys on the Jets were joining in that prayer.
Yeah,
why not just end the game?
That's interesting.
Why did you have to run? And if you're going to run two plays, why not run the ball? Which is, in effect, kneeling on it.
Mm-hmm.
But you throw two more passes after a guy just got his head taken off? You want to throw downfield two more times after one of your guys just got his head taken off and almost got paralyzed?
That's a good point.
Why didn't they just kneel down?
That's a good point. I don't know.
Maybe that's me being a little oversensitive, but I thought that was just not the right thing to do at that point. It's not like they were trying to win a game and it was meaningful. The game was over. It was done.
Yeah, that's
true.
They
weren't coming back. There was no need for them to do that.
Right.
I just didn't get it. But
that's a good point.
I digress there. But
no, it's okay. It's okay to digress. That's what we do well here.
Maybe we should call it PFW and digress.
That's That's a good play. Hey. How about that? Eric made it funny. Were we rolling on that?
Mark tape. He wasn't even rolling yet.
Yeah, that's good.
Two gender comes in a half an hour.
Only took him 2 years.
That's right. BMW and digress. I like that. That's good.
But the question was, could we see Anquan Boldin coming here? Sure. And especially
I would
the,
love it. I
under
think
the terms
I,
that you just suggested.
I think he's a fabulously physical receiver. I think it would be an I think it'd be a slam dunk.
He wants out of a team that hasn't historically won.
Right, right.
He wants to win.
Right.
He wants to come to a team that who knows what's going to happen this year, but
certainly
if they don't win it again.
Certainly seems to be I think, you know, the Patriots have enough under contract to where you know, they would certainly have to be considered competitive
sure.
next year with Brady back healthy.
And you know, maybe he's looking for a longer-term deal than a one-year conditional tryout deal.
Maybe. But the Patriots have made a habit of bringing guys in like
so
that and saying, hey, you know what?
Right.
Here, prove yourself.
Right.
We'll talk to you about a better deal.
Right. And, yeah, who knows? I think that's a great scenario. And
okay. Like it, Scott. Like the idea.
Yeah, great idea.
Definitely. John sends this question. He says, 9 days after the loss to the Dolphins, do you still feel the same as you did 9 minutes after the game?
Well, I mean, obviously, the shock has worn off. We've had time to digest
it. I don't feel near as shocked.
I don't feel near as shocked. I still, I'll feel better when they get back on the field and they play better than they did in that game. And until they do that, I'm still going to be a little hesitant about where this team is.
I think that's why people are a little hesitant this week. I mean, you know, there's not a whole lot of activity going on. Not a lot of emails today. I think people are kind of waiting and seeing. They want to see a game. They want to see this team play before they make any further judgments one way or the other.
In some ways, it was a blessing that that bye week came when it did. In other ways, it wasn't so much. It was a blessing in that it was such a horrible game, especially defensively,
mm-hmm.
that the best thing might have been, hey, let's just get away from football for a little while, not think about this, get it out of our system. So in that way, I think it was good that it happened. The bad thing is now that that gives you that much more time to say, where is this team?
Right.
Who is this team?
Right.
Where are they? But overall, I think it was a good thing that it came at this time. I'm just still, you know, this will be their fourth game, even though it's week five because
right.
of the bye. So
correct, yeah.
I think we'll know better after this West Coast trip where this team really is because they're playing San Francisco, which is, like we said earlier, about where we expected them to be, 500 fighting for
well, frankly, supremacy. Here's the thing. I mean, you know, I thought 2-1 after 3 weeks after Brady went down. Mm-hmm. I kind of reevaluated like everybody does mm-hmm. and everybody I'm sure did. And I mentioned this earlier in the show before you came in. And I'll be disappointed if they lose this game, but I won't be surprised if they lose at San Diego.
But
so I'm thinking 3-2 coming back home.
Well, it's certainly possible, but I think if that happens, I think people are going to be more concerned.
Because really? Even if they split the next two?
Yes, because if they split it and lose to San Diego, a team that they're most likely, if they made the playoffs, we're going to face.
Yeah, but it's a road game. I mean, you know, it's different.
It's a road
now.
Game, but, yeah. You know, if you're there are very few elite teams in the AFC, in the NFL, and in the AFC. You were looking at before Brady got injured, everyone was saying it was the Colts, the Patriots, the Chargers, not necessarily in that order, but those mm-hmm. were the three teams. They're going to play, all three of them are going to play each other this year.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see them again in the playoffs,
yeah.
most likely.
Yeah, sure, that's possible.
You need to take care of business in the regular season to make your chances better of playing them at home.
Okay, no argument there.
So
no
if
argument.
They lose to San yep. Diego, if they split these two games and they lose to San Diego, I think that's a concern because you're looking at a team that you might have to face in the playoffs, and if that's the case, you have to go back out there and play them.
You'd rather them beat San Diego and lose to San Francisco? What if the split turns out that way?
I think if it turns out that way,
there's more concern.
I think people are still going to be concerned, but...
So the only way you eliminate concern is by sweeping.
But if you're going to lose in a sweep, I'd rather beat the team in your conference because you're going to have to play them again in the playoffs.
Okay. No, that's fair.
You know?
Yeah, that's fair.
And that has more implications on your playoff seeding than you would losing to an NFC team.
John also says, now that a week has gone by, is everyone still panicking?
Well, like I said, I don't think it's panic, but I think people are just questioning where this team is. Who are they? What's their personality? And I think without Brady, still trying to figure out if Castle is going to be the man long term. There's question. We mm-hmm. you know, after the performance the defense put up, you know, we thought the defense might have been the strength of this team, but after what they did against the Dolphins, you want to see them come back and have a great effort, which I expect them to, because I don't expect them to lay two eggs in a row. I find it impossible to believe that they're going to go out in San Diego and let Frank Gore, San Francisco, and let Frank Gore do to them what Ronnie Brown did. Teams are going to try.
Sure.
Teams are going to try because...
Don't be shocked if you see a little single wing.
Oh, of course. They're going to try.
A little direct snap. But, yeah, I think so.
Look, I expect the defense to turn it around. I still don't know what we're going to get on offense. I want to see them score more than 20 points, though, yeah, which they haven't done yet this year. They got to help the defense out a little bit by doing their part and scoring some points.
Yes, they do.
So until they start doing that, I don't think panicking is the word, but concern is probably more appropriate.
Okay. Sheila in Clearwater, I'd asked earlier if anybody had seen the remarks made by, I think, Jimmy Johnson on Fox, and I don't remember who it was on ESPN,
about the whole staying out
on the West Coast thing. She says, I did see that show, and she said, I believe he qualified the remark by saying that there was a 10-day stretch between games.
There was a 10-day stretch between?
Yeah.
For Arizona?
Yeah, yeah. Was there a 10-day stretch between their games?
I don't think so. They played on Sunday and the previous Sunday.
That's what I thought. Did they play a Thursday night game for some reason?
It's too early for that.
No, I didn't think so.
The only Thursday night game was the opener with the Giants and the Redskins.
Right.
That this early in the season.
Right.
The
Thursdays
don't begin until November.
That's what I thought.
So
I don't know.
I don't think they did.
Well, the point was is that, you know, a couple of the analysts, as I mentioned earlier, basically came hard down on the Cardinals for doing that. It's like, you know what, in this day and age, you know, I could see this. You know, teams used to do that fairly routinely back in the 80s and, you know, and previously because, you know, it was a struggle, you know, to go back and forth, that they had to go bi-coastal like that and play back-to-back games on one coast coming from the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of teams would choose to stay. But nowadays with charter and the electronic aids that were and everything, Not necessary,
but I think it's an advantage. I mean, it didn't help the Cardinals.
But here's the thing. Mike Golic said this morning on ESPN, he remembers doing that specifically when he was with the Eagles.
Uh-huh.
Won the first game, lost the second.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like every case he could remember at the time, win the first game, lose the second. Nobody really knows if you'd gone back and forth, if you win the second game, if you change things around.
It happens so infrequently, though. I mean, I don't know if that's something you can really assign a pattern to. I don't really think it happens all that often in the league.
I'm going to go out on a limb. Win the first game, lose the second. That's what will happen.
Okay. Well.
Okay. 2 weeks, we'll revisit it.
Okay.
All right. Win the first game, lose the second. Now, do I think that if they come back next week, that they'd have a better chance to beat San Diego? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily.
I just think it's an advantage because you're already out there, 3-hour time difference. You're already used to that time difference.
Okay.
You have a shorter...
what do you do in your off time?
Study your opponent.
You're gonna be all football.
You have more time
to
study your opponent.
Even on your day off, you're gonna
Super Bowl
study
week.
Your opponent.
What do you do all week? You're studying your opponent all week.
No, you're getting ready to get your family out to the Super Bowl site. That's what you're doing
the week before.
Yeah,
but then the week of the Super Bowl, you have that whole week to prepare for the game.
Okay,
I think you look at it like it's a Super Bowl week.
Okay, all right.
You have more time.
Okay,
you're already adjusted.
We'll find out.
Why not?
All right. Okay. That's fair.
I don't know if it'll. I don't know.
Fair assessment.
Like you said, I don't know if how much that'll affect the game itself, but I think it helps the players in their preparation for it.
Right. Let's wrap it up here with Nick from Wayland, who says, "Great show, guys. Appreciate your perspectives. What would you identify as the Patriots' biggest weakness following their first three games? I think Castle is getting too much heat given his experience level. Clearly, there are more issues with this team to get creamed by a team like the Dolphins."
Well. Like I said, I thought the strength of the team was going to be the front seven. And after the Ronnie Brown performance, I have to take a step back and wonder if that's still the case. Defensive back is still a concern because I don't think there's really a solidified cornerback spot there. You know, Delpho O'Neal has been starting, but I wonder if that's going to last all season. I mean, you have some competition at that spot. There are other guys who, you know, Terrence Wheatley, I think, is eventually going to make some noise to step into that role, just based on what I saw of him during training camp, which was very impressive. I'm wondering why he hasn't had a chance to step up more in games. But it's a toss-up right now, John. I still think at quarterback there's a concern because we don't know what we're getting out of Castle.
Yeah.
Are we going to get the 150 yards to 175 yards and a touchdown and maybe a pick a game? Is that what we need? I mean, are we going to be scoring more than 20 points at all this year?
Well, they need to be. It'll take a lot of pressure off that defense. I mean, I agree that I think where Nick says that he thinks Castle's getting too much heat given the experience level, I agree with that. However, if you look at the individual units, it's a slam dunk. It's quarterback. It's quarterback that is the biggest weakness overall right now based on the experience level, which is, you know, it's kind of like a catch-22. What do you do?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
After that, I'd have to say right now, based on what we've seen, it's the secondary still got to be considered a weakness, and a lot of that may be just because they're not getting they're not getting as much rush as they'd like to get in order to make the secondary that much stronger. And I'd have to throw the offensive line in there too, just because of some of the injuries they've had there and the lack of continuity that they've had. I just don't think the offensive line has done an adequate job to this point in time.
Well, I'm going to go – I'll say offense in general is more of my concern because they're not scoring the points that they were scoring last year. And in not doing that, they're not helping out the defense as much. Now, look, before the Ronnie Brown game, they were doing – the defense was doing its job, keeping – I think they only held opponents to 10 points. This is a concern for me if the Ronnie Brown thing continues. Because with that front seven, especially the defensive line, which is by all accounts one of the best in the game, mm-hmm. if they continue to let running backs do that to them, they're going to be in for a long season. Like I said, I don't see that happening. I think they'll bounce back from this. I think the Miami game was an aberration. I'm not going to be surprised if other teams try that Arkansas spread formation that Miami ran, but I don't think other teams will have necessarily the personnel to do it. I think Miami was in a good position where they had a guy like Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams in that backfield where they were able to do that kind of thing. They had a good tight end in Fasano who could help block and could also go out as a receiver. I don't know if other teams are going to have the capability to do that against the Patriots. They may try, but I think the defense will be okay. I think they'll come into their own because I still think the front seven is going to be the strength of that team, and they're going to have to help out the secondary by getting more pressure on the quarterbacks, on opposing quarterbacks. So my concern is, as it was when Tom Brady went down in that first quarter against Kansas City, is this offense going to be able to score points and succeed? If they can score 24 or more points a game, they should be okay.
They'll be in every game.
They'll be in every game, yeah, and absolutely. I think they'll win more of those games than not.
That should be a target. But my concern right now, should be up on the bulletin board. This is our goal. We need to hit this number.
But right now they haven't scored 20 points yet, so
I'm
concerned.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's a fair assessment. Listen, thanks for the pinch hitting today. It's greatly appreciated. I'm sure B-Lo will appreciate it.
He better.
Yeah? Is he going to return the favor for you someday?
I don't know, but we room together on the road, so he'll have plenty of time to hear about it.
Well, then make sure that you give him an earful.
Make sure you tell your friends you heard it on PVN.
Yeah, there you go. And you and I will be together on Thursday.
This Thursday,
yeah,
yep.
Because I'll be in
Tampa. You'll be in a remote location, an undisclosed location.
An undisclosed location.
With a massage and with bar service at the pool.
That's right. Actually, I'm working, okay? I am working. It's the Pittsburgh South Florida game.
South Florida.
That's right. Correct.
All right.
We'll happen to be in Tampa, but that's where we'll be on Thursday. Tomorrow's program. Hello, Brian. Nice to see you.
Not Brian Lowe.
No, Brian Morey, because In the Hall with Brian Morey is coming up here momentarily. Tomorrow's program, Randy Cross is joining us.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get some of his perspective on the Pats and get some of his West Coast perspective and maybe the rest of the NFL. Who knows? But we'll sneak in with some of that. And our thanks to John Krumpacker, who covers the Niners for the San Francisco Chronicle, also for joining us earlier today. What's up?
I'm about turning your mic on.
Yeah, I got that.
There you go.
I'm new with this.
Button.
Let's get this straight. It's The Hall with Andre Tippett. I just, you know, Inside the Hall with Andre Tippett.
Yeah, okay.
I just.
You're riding those coattails, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to. You better.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's see. What does it say on the website? Does it say?
It probably says, says Andre Tippett and Brian Morey.
Yeah, with but, yeah.
Have you tried on his jacket yet?
I have
his
not.
His Hall of Fame jacket?
You?
No. I asked him to. He said he would, but I haven't.
Oh, he said he'd let you do it?
Yeah.
Oh,
I think
cool.
It would probably fit me well right across the chest, I'm thinking.
I could wear it as a parka, for God's sake.
How much padding do you need? Yeah, exactly. It's a parka. That's exactly right.
If I get bigger man boobs, maybe I can fit you.
Wait a few years.
I'm
It'll
working
happen.
On it. I'm working on it.
What's there we that? Go.
Are you staring at my gut? I'm working on it.
That's right. That's right.
Middle-aged man.
What do you got coming up? Anything good today?
We're going to talk some hall. you know.
Well, that's appropriate.
Wow. Yeah, since the show's called In the Hall.
That's my cue.
Yeah. Okay. My phone's going to ring about seven times.
Who are you, Fred Kirsch? Having phone calls on the radio?
No, I think that we're going to we'll talk a little bit about the game because I like to get Andre's perspective on that stuff. It's fun to sit here. We talk about alumni and we talk about things, but I think it's always good to get Andre's perspective on the team and the game and situations that come up because, you know, he's been through them all, good and bad. So,
right.
Yep. I mean, like I think we talked last week a little bit about how the fact that he missed an entire season getting hurt in the last preseason game, which isn't much different than what Tom Brady went through.
Mm-hmm.
Just add 5 minutes of football, even though he didn't play in the preseason, only played 5 minutes of football. So, you know, I heard what you guys were saying on the way in about being concerned about points and whatnot, and it's certainly a legitimate issue, as you said. You know, you look at how prolific this offense was last year, and you'd like to think that it's not just – I'm getting next
you can't even come on the radio and you've got people next to him. What's going on?
Go ahead. You can answer him right here. And nobody's listening.
I don't even know who it is. Who's 133? I don't know who that is.
I don't know.
So, you know, I think that getting Andre's perspective on a lot of those things is very interesting, and so maybe we'll take some emails.
Good.
And let Andre shoot from the hip.
Sounds
good. It's ask a question. It's interview Andre. It's all Andre.
It's not a bad deal.
No,
it's not a bad deal.
You get a chance to sit down with a Pro Football Hall of Famer every week. You could be doing worse things.
That's pretty cool.
True.
Okay. And you'll get the chance to listen to it coming up next.